Welcome to the Only TARDIS.
We are the Only TARDIS.
The Only TARDIS.
There are no more left in this universe.
The Only Lonely TARDIS.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lonely TARDIS Season 2, Episode 4. This week we discuss The Power of Three, the fourth episode in this wonderful new Doctor Who Season 7. I'm Dolly Domofsky, as usual, unless I become somebody else, which I have not yet. Also joining me, Sean Norton.
Hello, good to be back. Keep you guys in check.
Yeah, he was not with us last week.
I was very upset about it. I missed you guys.
And Stephen Strum returns as well.
Yes, he has. And I missed you too, Sean.
You know, we've had four episodes this season, and only two have we had all three people together.
Mm-hmm. But every episode has had Dolly Domofsky. So
true.
That's the connecting tissue. You are our bad wolf.
I am. I'm kind of like the Doctor. Sean, you're Rory. Stephen, you're Amy. And this
is
the power of three. Although I do have to say, I don't lean towards this direction, but Rory's a good looking dude.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that new slicked hairstyle he's sporting.
I was waiting for this compliment. I mean, in my pants.
Oh yeah,
because that's British underwear.
Yeah, fucking. Oh, man, they usually it's weird that they usually kind of avoid Britishisms quite a bit on Doctor Who. But, yeah, that kind of shocked me for a second this season. I was just like, holy shit, I forgot the show is, like, British.
I don't understand. He's not wearing pants. I don't get it.
Oh, my God, it's so weird.
You bring that little point up, Stephen, but there's actually a special, I think, next week or this coming weekend on BBC America of Doctor Who in the USA. That's going to precede the episode, kind of the mid-season finale, the Angels in New York. So,
Angels Take Manhattan.
Angels Take Manhattan. Whatever.
Angels in New York sounds like a bad baseball movie. Angels Take Manhattan. Angels in the outfield.
Angels Take Manhattan.
Wasn't there another episode like the Daleks of Manhattan or something like that? Like in season 3, that was
that
episode, wasn't it?
It was something.
I try not to think about that episode.
It's not.
No, that was
good.
Season 4. That was season 4.
That was season 3. That was Martha Stewart.
You're right. That was season 3.
Ah, you're making me think about it.
That was with the. I'm not going to go there. Thankfully, we have Series 7. Season 7, Episode 4.
We have quite an episode to talk about.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but I had some strong feelings the first two times I watched this one.
Yeah, I also watched it a couple times.
By the third, I had most of it figured out. I was a little bit more, I was calmer. I wasn't so wound up. But yeah, I'm looking forward to really digging into this one.
The power of the third time watching it, perhaps.
All right, you're on probation.
All right, let me go through the plot here real quick. Again, spoilers for anybody who's you know what? If you're listening to this episode, this can't be a spoiler.
Don't assume that. As always, give them a spoiler warning. We're gentlemen here.
Spoiler.
This entire podcast will be full of spoilers. Every episode of this show that we do will be full of spoilers for the.
I'm going to go get a bottle of water. But Dolly, you give them the 5 to 10 minute summary that you're very good at doing.
I'm gonna try to get this down to 3.5 minutes. So the episode begins with Amy and Rory trying to kind of take a look at their normal life outside of the Doctor. It's basically been a year or so since they got married. They have a, is it, was it a year since they get married?
No,
or was it 10 years?
It's been 10 years since them hanging out with the Doctor.
That's
like,
true.
You add up all the time they spent with him. But I would imagine, I could not imagine like them having only gotten married after 8 years hanging around with the Doctor. So it was probably closer to 9 or so years of Doctor time with them. So something like that. It's tough. Sean has maybe some kind of theory on this.
The name, the 10 years was mentioned, but we'll wait for Sean to come back.
Back. What are we talking about?
How long have Amy and Rory been married?
Oh, at least 10 years. They've been traveling 10 years, their time, not Earth time, not Doctor time.
So they didn't get married till the end of season 5, so they spent some time with the Doctor, so it's like 9 years they've been married.
Well, I mean,
they've been married quite a while. They've aged a lot more than I gave them credit for.
True.
Before they verbalized it.
So it's been 10 years their time, but how many years of Earth time? Has it only been about a year of Earth time?
It's got to be at least 2, right?
Well,
we met them 2 years ago at the very least.
Two and a half years.
So
I'm pretty sure Earth time coincides in the Doctor Who universe. I'm pretty sure Earth time coincides with real Earth time, like our time.
Because they
show the date in the very beginning of season 5 of Doctor Who, and it's when the guys are showing up, you know, the giant eyeball monsters or whatever like that. They show the date throughout that whole season of like this is going to happen at such and such a date, don't they?
I think so. They also did it again. They did this episode, which really took a lot of the scenes from Life with the Ponds, and that were directly injected in this episode.
That really did feel like it was a prequel to this particular episode, didn't it?
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it. Holy crap.
Oh, my goodness. You should watch it because they did. I think they did take a few scenes out of there. In fact, the one July scene, I think, was directly out of there. But regardless, so Amy and Rory are trying to figure out, should they continue traveling with the Doctor, which they've done for a decade now, or should they go into normal life. Rory's still a nurse. Amy is writing travel guides for a magazine, which is a little bit interesting because we'll get to this a little bit later, Sean. In the previous episode, I think the beginning of the season, Amy was a model. So how she jumps from a model to writing travel guides could be interesting.
Well, she pointed out and
she quit. Yeah. She straight up said she quit.
Yep.
A couple episodes ago.
She can't hold down a job because it's all boring.
And so one day after they're kind of discussing what to do with their normal life and so forth, out of the blue, I guess you could say, just billions of these little black cubes show up around the planet. And so they're trying to figure out what these things are, and I mean everybody on the planet trying to figure out what these are. The Doctor shows up, decides to run his own experiments, says he's going to crash with Amy and Rory for a bit, decides to mess around with some of his own experiments, and who shows up knocking on Amy and Rory's door looking for spikes in energy, but Unit. A Unit, which we haven't seen in decades, I think, right? It hasn't been in any of these seven series.
Not decades, but they were in season 4, I think, was the last time I know for certain that they played a major role or whatnot. I think they could have they possibly might have been mentioned or something.
Sure.
Weren't they in the David Tennant episode, the special where he they get sent to the planet?
Which
and
planet?
That one planet.
Okay. Way to go.
Oh, is that the one where they...
So one of the final specials where he worked... I can never remember the name of it, but they went through the tunnel and got zapped to that sand planet. Was it Unit handling
Planet
things?
Of the Dead.
Planet of the Dead, yes.
Was that Unit who was handling... Like, they were shooting the...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, because the dude was geeking out because he finally got to meet the Doctor. They all knew who he was and everything. Yeah, no, that was Unit for sure. We've seen it. I just don't think we've seen them since Matt Smith took over.
Yeah, I don't believe so. And then if you want to get even technical, Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart even though he's not on screen, he plays a pretty big role in the very final David Tennant episode where it is him calling and finding out that Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart is dead. That makes him decide to face his own death, and I think that's pretty important because Dally, who should charge of Unit, but
but the Brigadier's daughter.
Kate Stewart.
Kate Stewart. Just a
Which
quick...
Which was awesome.
That was an awesome awesome callback. By the way, Unit made quite a bit of appearances, apparently. Siri in Season 1, The Aliens of London, World War III, they had cameos in there. Season 2, The Christmas Invasion, they were there. Season 3, The Sound of Drums, Last of the Time Lords.
There
was just like one of the Unit aircraft. Season 4, The Centaurum Strategium, The Poison Sky... Turn Left. Remember that the alternate kind of timeline thingy?
Yeah.
Stolen Earth, Journey's End. They were in that. Planet of the Dead, The End of Time. They had a quick cameo on The End of Time. And then this season, finally, The Power of Three. It's the first Matt Smith. I think this is the first one they've actually had a major role in quite some time.
I just wanted to say that Kate Stewart, the new unit lady, is probably my new favorite character of this season thus far. Like, she was just awesome.
Let's not forget.
Really?
That...
Over Rory's dad?
Yeah, totally. I think like she Rory's was just dad. Great. I absolutely thought she was fantastic.
You know, she reminds me of who ended up becoming the. Not the one. What's the British leader?
Margaret Thatcher.
What's she kind of reminds me of Harriet Jones a little bit, because wasn't Harriet Jones kind of wrapped up in a little bit of that kind of stuff?
I mean, she created that universe version of Torchwood, I believe. Or no, she didn't create it, but she was like, she used it pretty early on, and she got kind of wrapped up in that sort of thing. I mean, she was the prime minister, so she was involved
in
a lot of
stuff. Sure,
that's
what I was, prime minister. I do have to... quickly and see, I totally forgot what I was gonna quickly mention. It was
great, Dally.
Quite interesting, and it'll pop in my head eventually. Trust me. Back to The Power of Three. They talked to Kate Stewart. She explains that they really don't know what these cubes are, but they could sure use the doctor's help in figuring it out. They start watching the cubes. They can't figure anything out. They're not doing anything. Rumors start to show up or start to appear that maybe it's just a marketing campaign, maybe it's some type of viral marketing campaign, and so the doctor says, all right, well, I can't figure this out, let's go, I'm gonna take off for a little bit. And so he takes off, goes in the TARDIS, and that's where we see a lot of the travels. I think it was that the August Life with the Ponds episode. It took place in August. He talks about all his travels and all that stuff while he's leaving the message. I think it directly relates to this, because he goes off on his travels. He explains it again, all the things that he did. And he appears at a wedding reception for a friend of Amy and Rory's, and decides to take Amy and Rory away for a few weeks of their time, but really only few minutes Earth time.
Dally, like, generalize. Speed this up, man.
Yeah, I'll speed this bad boy up. So they leave. They go off on adventures. They come back after a few weeks.
People have kind of
lost.
Kind of becoming just a fact of life.
Yeah,
these
yeah.
Cubes,
I mean,
all over the
they're paperweights.
But nobody really doing anything with them. Amy and Rory have kind of forgotten them. People are throwing them in bins.
Suddenly, they start to activate. The number 7 pops up on some of these cubes. Then it starts to count down. Eventually, the cubes count down to 0. They all open up. People start dying from cardiac arrest. Rory, the doctor, and Amy, at kind of different points, find a portal in Rory, the hospital that Rory works in. Takes them to this spaceship where they meet somebody who's part of the Shukri. A member of the Shukri, who is, in Wikipedia, says, according to Gallifreyan legend, they were self-appointed pest controllers in the universe. The Shukri guy there kind of mentions that he's here to just wipe out humanity because it's
calls them a contagion.
Yeah, he kind of calls them the pest,
an
infection.
Like
yeah, doctor ends up using the kind of reverses everything with his sonic screwdriver, and all is well. Get back on Earth. By the way, the Shukri just kind of disappears. He was a hologram the whole time.
He was an AI for the ship. Yeah. He was never really real.
Right. He was never really real, really there. They get back to the planet Earth, And Amy and Rory decide to go along with the Doctor on further adventures instead of leading a normal life. So,
which is an issue because, yes. Or which is important because we know that the next episode, this Saturday, is the last episode to feature Amy and Rory in a story.
Well, so. that we know of, right? It's
that,
the last.
Well, that one. We know of. Yeah. That is what it seems like, or you know.
So,
that's their plan.
Before any of us speak. Or before Steven and I speak, Sean, you had some really good thoughts on where this episode fits within the general continuity of this season. Can you go ahead and chime in right now with what you're thinking?
Oh, okay. So, thank you for that, Dolly. Do I have to do the whole thing where your summary was great and I took a nap and all that stuff?
You can always say that. I always appreciate it.
We're now out of sync. Like I feel like I've done all of this already, which is actually going to tie into the point that I feel like I've made already, but I'll do it again because you probably never heard it. So, these episodes are being shown out of order. Now, I hadn't realized it before this episode this week. Apparently some others did, but yeah, it's fine. Good for them, sleuthy. But the most obvious telling point, apparently there are hints sprinkled all over, the most obvious telling point is the fact that in A Town Called Mercy, Season 7, Episode 3, they talk about Rory leaving his cell phone charger with King Henry VIII, Louis VIII. Who is it? Is it Henry VIII? Is that who it is?
One of those British-y types. Yeah.
So one of those kings and monarchs or whatever. And Rory leaves his cell phone charger behind. And we're like, oh, those guys, they go on zany adventures when we don't see it happen. But wait, now we're in Episode 4 with the cubes or the power of three or whatever. And suddenly we're seeing him take them away for 7 weeks. And during those 7 weeks, what happens? They visit the king. They get in trouble. Rory has his cell phone charger with him that he leaves behind. These episodes are being shown out of order. Moffat's doing his wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff. And it's all going to kind of culminate next week. And I'm not sure how yet, and I'm not sure exactly the order yet, but my theory is that we're seeing it from Pond's perspectives, you know, in the natural progression of time, moving backwards and forwards. But the Doctor has already experienced what's going to happen, kind of like a River Song situation. Uh-huh. And he's going backwards, and he's kind of jumping in out of sync with them, which explains my biggest thing, and the thing I've been hooked on this entire time, is that really, really sad look he gave at the end of Dinosaurs on a Spaceship when they were looking at Earth, you know, over Rory's dad's shoulder. And he looks at both of them, and he's just so, so sad. And he has a conversation with Amy on that same, you know, on that ship in that same episode where, you know, he'll be around for the death of them or whatever. And he gives her this look, and everybody's like, oh, they're just sharing a touching moment. I say, nope. I say he knows what's happening. He's lying about where he's been or what age is or whatever. And it's more Moffat craziness. And I think next week it's just all going to – or maybe even next spring. I don't really know. So, but yes, I think up until this point we have been completely 180'd in terms of the chronology of the show, which could actually go as far back as Pond Life.
Boom. You know what?
Timeline.
You know what, John? This actually does kind of there's a couple other like just character things that make more sense now out of that because we could kind of understand a little bit better now why the Doctor is so pissed off in the episodes preceding this, especially in A Town Called Mercy. And then Amy is like, wait, why are you suddenly being so, you know, angry and mean and stuff, like, you know, ready to kill and stuff like this? Maybe now it's because he has seen what happens to them, and he knows already what's going to happen or what might happen to them. So he's already gone through that major character moment that would have driven him to the point of being the kind of Doctor that he was headed towards in the previous few episodes. And then that's why there was that such a disparity between the Doctor we knew leaving Season 6 and the Doctor we picked up with at the beginning of Season 7.
Right, absolutely. It explains the rage. It explains the weird, why is Matt Smith acting so funny this season, stuff that everybody has been talking about. It explains all of that because of the fact that we know something, one way or another, something is happening next week that removes the Ponds from our television screens in a Doctor's life.
I was just going to say, the villains next week, too, do involve time travel themselves. So absolutely. They could... The angels could be screwing with the chronology or something like that too, or something that the angels do makes the forces the Doctor to screw with the timeline too, or something. He might be trying to stop whatever it is from happening too. We don't know if he's just trying to try and get his last moments with them, or if he's actually trying to change something. because the way he talks to Brian in that one episode is he says never them, never ever them when talking about, you know, companions that have died. So maybe they actually do die, but he is saying like maybe that is his confession, saying like, I'm going to stop it from happening. Like, I'm going to go back and screw around with the timeline, you know, here and there, and try and fix it. I'm going to try and make it better.
It's possible. So, I mean, if they maintain the same story with the angels as they did, excuse me, back in season 3 when they were first introduced, where they grab you, send you back in time, and then feed off your time energy, and that's feed, then there's nothing a doctor can do, because as we learned then, that seems like some of those fixed point style moments with the angel stuff where he can't do anything about that. I could be wrong. They could introduce a complete new layer of the mythology next week like they did in season 5. But for now, I think it's more of a rage and trying to hold on to something that's ending. And we'll see. I mean, every week so far, something has happened that has completely changed the course of everything I think is going to happen. So yeah. I don't put it in. And now we've got, I don't know if you guys watched the previews for next week.
Yeah. Yep.
But now we've got River Song back in the mix. How does that even happen? Who knows at what point she's plucked out of her journey, which we kind of know forward to backwards, backwards to forward, but a lot of missing, you know, parts, of course. Who knows what part she's going to play? Like, it's just, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know that I'm 100% confident that it's some sort of timey-wimey stuff we're going to hear about next week that puts a different spin on the first 5 episodes of this.
So I think I think you're totally onto it right there. I think we're seeing this out of order for a reason as well. And I think the way that Moffat has framed these episodes as kind of these one-off movies really does add to that as well, because you can kind of watch these in any order. You can watch any of these episodes. You can start with Power of Three. You can go to the next ones, watch them out of order, and they still have, I think, that same effect, because the Doctor kind of knows. He knows what's going to happen at the very end. It's almost like you want to watch that Dinosaurs on a Spaceship first, and then that sets up the rest of stuff. But regardless, I think you know, purposefully designing these as one-off episodes really does, lend to that that theory. But let's, before we get too far into the theory, let's hop into the actual episode and talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, because we did kind of
now
go
that
past
we've
that.
Gotten from top to bottom on your theory. Let's not go too deep into the theory that we've all agreed is probably a good theory, and let's go back.
Well,
that's fine, because I'm very excited to discuss this.
So I'm going to hop in right away with my thoughts. My thoughts will be the quickest, because I
don't have any.
Well, kind of. I didn't really like this episode. This was easily my least favorite episode of this season, because all this episode did was introduce dangling threads that went off into nowhere. And you know, I'm assuming they're all going to get tied back together at the end of this season, but
don't assume that.
Well, I can't. You're right. I can't assume that. But there's so many loose ends that it seemed like there really was no resolution here. And the only resolution, the Doctor shutting off all these cubes and, you know, using a sonic screwdriver, was it was too easy. I mean, he just walked onto the spaceship. Walked around the hologram dude and took out a sonic screwdriver and, you know, fixed everything. And it came off as way too easy of a solution. I mean, it wasn't threatening at all, like any of the previous episodes seemed to be. You know, the Doctor, Amy, and Rory never seemed like they were under any real stress. They were just kind of along for the ride.
Yeah. I think that kind of where part of that comes from is that in your normal Doctor Who episodes, I think that unless you're dealing with a season's premiere or a season finale, what you end up usually getting is a lot of a sort of sci-fi fantasy adventure A plot, and then the B plot is usually some kind of like emotional journey or whatever, and then, you know, in the capstones of the season, so you have the season premiere and the season finale, you always get like a lot more stuff going on. But this episode, I think they're pretty honest about this at the very, very beginning, saying that, like, you know, the Doctor only slowed down long enough to hang out with us in real life once. I think that was kind of them admitting, like, this is going to be the absolute opposite of what you're used to, and that we are going to focus on, centralize on the characters, and that is our A plot for this episode, and we're going to be interaction between the companions and their families and their normal life. That's going to be the focus, and then the sort of side stuff is going to be the cubes and the evil monster in space and all that stuff. And so what you kind of run into is them kind of the way they normally tie up the loose ends in the character stuff, it gets used instead to tie up the loose ends in the story stuff now, which I don't, or in the plot stuff anyway. Now I still agree that there are some dangling loose ends here, that they kind of got sloppy with in terms of just the plot. Like, why were the, what were they called? The monsters, this one, the alien, interdimensional aliens,
or the Shakri?
The Shakri, you know, why were they taking people onto their ship and putting and making them unconscious, like Brian and Rory? Why were they doing that? What happened to the cube mouth guys, the weird guys with the fucked up mouths? What were they? Were they androids like the little girl? Or if so, why didn't they just look like normal people? Why were they taking people on board? What happened to all the other people who were on board when the ship exploded and the doctor and Amy and Rory all run out of the ship? Like, it's, you know, it's like, oh, it's adventure time, so we're going to run out of here and jump through the portal at the last second. Except there was like a dozen people still on that ship. Were they already dead? Were they still alive? Why didn't the fucked up mouth guys try to, like, restrain the doctor and Amy and Rory and try to keep them from blowing up the ship? Like, all it would have taken is those two, like, walking
gone
out of
there. They served their 3 minutes of pot time and they were out of there.
There's an entire scene where, you know, you see this old man being, like, kidnapped by these guys, and they never really go out of their way to explain. Like, the only explanation I could really think of is that they were studying the humans, but I thought that was the entire point of the cubes, was to study the humans' interactions, and that was why they, you know, all started acting up and doing crazy stuff and started scanning the internet and whatnot. So I don't really understand what the point was there, and or where they went, or why the doctor was just okay with letting all those people die, or if they were dead in the first place. All it would have taken was another 5 seconds of dialogue saying, or, you know, with those two guys coming out of the shadows and then the doctor shutting them down and saying, oh yeah, they were robots too. And speaking of which, why, like, he scans that robot little girl at one point and says, oh, it's a robot, like, I'm going to scan it, but never really says why or what he's doing. And then they just leave her in the middle of the hallway too. Like, there's a lot of loose ends that I think you can kind of get away with having just by the virtue of having UNIT involved, because you can always just say, like, oh, well, UNIT took care of that. UNIT cleaned that up. UNIT did this. UNIT did that, you know. So, but in terms of, like, character interaction in the story, that in that respect, I thought it was absolutely great. It was so nice to see. I love these episodes of, like, the Doctor Comes to Dinner type episodes, where, you know, the Doctor, like, the Lodger, and the Doctor is dealing with real people in real situations and normal stuff, except this time, rather than with a one-off character like, I forget his name, from the Lodger and the with the baby, with Stormageddon, the baby. I forget everybody. I forget everything. Oh, yeah, I'm getting old, like,
yeah,
Dally.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, but, by the way. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Dally, you were there when you were also there when Rory left his phone charger behind with King Henry VIII. So.
Yeah, I was helping King Henry at that time.
Mm-hmm. You're the reason it was such a big deal, is you know, you saw it and you knew what it was. That you've just been alive that long. Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, the character interaction stuff was all great. I thought I liked. I felt it was a good way to say goodbye to the pawns in an episode, or at least maybe not say goodbye, because I feel like that'll probably be taken care of in the next episode, which seems a little bit strange to me that that'll be a one-parter. I kind of feel like, why doesn't their departure get a two-part episode? And it seems about the right time for one. But we'll see what they end up doing with it. But other than that, I thought it was just putting the spotlight on the pawns in such a big bad way right at the last minute was a really great idea, and I liked everything that they did with them in everything. And I thought that Kate Stewart is probably the best new character, if not of this, is just of this season for sure. Mm-hmm. Maybe even if you don't include, like, Amy and Rory, maybe of this entire Matt Smith run thus far. I really, really liked her. So yeah, those are my thoughts on the episode. I didn't really have anything profound to say about it. Like, Sean with his continuity things. I think everything in that respect has already been said. But just, there was some great character stuff. It was good to see the pawns get the spotlight. And I guess the last scene this episode also has the last scene they ever filmed together, or the last scene that Karen Gillan and Matt Smith and Arthur Darvill were all with together is when they enter when they all get in the TARDIS together. I guess they walked off and shut the door, and then they all had a big group hug and cried together after they were done filming, and that was the last stuff they all did together for the show. So it's kind of poignant, I guess, to have such an episode right at the end. You know,
there's surfing on Reddit just now in preparation for the show, and while you were talking, Stephen, because I just fell asleep, somebody had a great screen capture of one of the cubes I think it was on Rory's table. It was actually
Amy's. It looks like Amy's table.
Yeah, it looks like Amy's table, but then Rory and Amy are married. And it's a screen capture from the episode that shows the cube on the end of this table. Right next to it is a stopwatch, or a pocket watch, I should say.
No, you piece of shit. Don't you do this to me.
Yeah, it's a pocket watch. So
don't you do this to me.
It looks like a stopwatch, actually.
It looks like the pocket watch, which Sean mentioned while you were on your diatribe, Stephen. Sean replied to me in the Skype chat that, does this add more to the Rory as the master fuel to that fire?
No, it's a trick. It's a trap. We can't fall for this, guys. Like,
it could be like the next Doctor, where a fob watch is sometimes just a fob watch.
Could you imagine if Rory was actually the next Doctor, which could explain how he lived for 2,000 plus years?
Fuck you, Dally. Stop it.
forget being the master. What if Matt Smith turns into Rory?
Well, add this to the list of crazy theories. The episode we should devote.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
We just theorize where the show can go and what crazy
nonsense can come. We'll do that one after this mid-season is over, because we'll have a little bit of a break to discuss the stuff.
Mm-hmm. We'll do a conspiracy theory cast after.
That is funny, though. Bookmark that, Dolly. That's some crazy stuff.
All right. We're going to continue. So, Sean, have you kind of talked a little bit about what you generally feel about this episode? Because we mentioned how there were... Okay, well, go ahead. I'll stop talking and let you continue.
No, it's okay. You were going to transition.
I was going to transition.
What did you want me to build off of?
Well, you had in kind of the pre-show stuff and on some of Twitter, you were talking about how you really enjoyed some of the actually, tell me how you really enjoyed this episode, except for the kind of the Chakri things, which that was my biggest loose end right there, personally. But you said you really liked it up until that point. Can you kind of explain why?
Well, here's the thing, and I've been mulling over the right way to say it while you guys have been going over some of your criticisms, because it seems that this is the first time and possibly ever where we're all in agreement that an episode in general just doesn't hold up. And the reason is, and we've seen this in the past with Doctor Who, where if you bring up certain things at the end, or you start to put things under a microscope, then you start to see everything else fall apart, because one thread leads to another, and all these potholes open up, and then whoosh, and some episodes you just have to look at and be like, well, it's just Doctor Who, that's kind of how it is, whatever. Unfortunately, this is one that you have to make a decision. You either have to judge it as a whole Doctor Who episode from beginning to end, and if you do that, then in my opinion, once they start figuring out there's these wormholes with a ship from another dimension that's sending these cubes to Earth to study us and then kill us, and it's this crazy big potential continuity-spanning enemy that even the kids of Gallifrey feared, that is trying to wipe out humanity before they expand to the stars, but then wait, kind of not really, quickly dismissed. Doctor does a little wavy screwdriver stuff like Steven or Dolly, both of you guys said. Boom, pow, problem fixed. By the way, those people died on a spaceship. Doctor didn't save them. What's up? What happened to the 15 minutes everybody was unconscious with their heart attacks? I don't know. They're fine. Ah, it's awful.
He did say that He did say that he used the cubes to restart their hearts, but then that does
but
mean
was,
but
like,
they were like dead for 15
no
minutes.
Heart. Like there was no these people were dead. No, I mean, oxygen. Said the brain like yeah, I get it. He used a little magic screwdriver there and brought everybody back to life. That's fine, but my point being is these little tiny things that they really really add up. And not only do they really add up in the last 10 minutes of the episode. And they just completely undermine everything else because then you wonder what the point was. Why would the cubes count down? Why would they take a year? Why would they all do random things? Why would they, like, ah?
Well, they do say why they – I mean, a couple of those things they do explain. I mean, they take a year because they wanted the cubes to be off of – they wanted them to be everywhere. They wanted people to, take them into their
like
homes
I
and stuff, be curious about them.
Right. Then people would take them into their houses.
And then forget about them. They didn't want anybody to be thinking about them and be ready for them. And they actually say that, like, the government says that, the cubes are provisionally safe. So nobody thinks of them as a threat anymore. So nobody is trying to devise ways to stop them.
But it's the dumbest thing ever because even even Rory's – and this is the problem because if the characters themselves had not mentioned this, it might not have been a big a deal. But even Rory's dad says, hey, suddenly millions of cubes all over the world on every continent in every country, millions of them being pulled into people's houses. Maybe they're bombs. Oh, no, wait, sorry. They're just going to send out electrical shocks after a year. And I get it. I get that it targets the heart, and I love the idea that it's a play on our lackadaisical nature to just adapt this technology and bring it – whatever. I like that. But the fact that the characters themselves got involved and said, like, a way better thing for these super crazy advanced aliens that exist in all of time and none of time and everywhere and nowhere and as a group and alone and all this other crap. They could have done it so much better in a billion ways. In a billion ways.
Yeah.
So
I'm just
getting a little riled up.
I do agree that I like the concept of it is human nature to take the extraordinary and make it mundane. That whole kind of concept that went along, you know, we have things like iPads and stuff like that, and that is stuff that would have been insane futuristic stuff like in the 60s was literally science fiction and now is just taken absolutely for granted. And the Doctor kind of pulls out some pretty good quotes about how that is part of what makes humans special. But the plot was full of holes. I mean, and they bring up a lot of really. They bring up a lot of really crazy huge things that, like you said, have big effects on the continuity of things. Like for instance, like they do say that they're from another dimension, so that means that the dimensional travel stuff is back in play. You know, which we had lost after season
one dimension over. They're attacking Earth from one dimension over.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah,
Wait a minute. So this entire new series, we've only seen this happen once or twice by accident, except for that time where, you know, Torchwood on the other end was actually burning a hole in the universe, jumping back and forth, and then it was banned forever. But that's fine. So now all of a sudden we have a species that not only can do that, but was so scary that they were thought as myth, just like a certain Pandorica.
Yep.
That kept Gallifrey.
Which was a cube.
And the Toclafane too. Back in the Masters, that was another Time Lord urban legend or whatever. It was maybe this is time. Oh God, this is all gonna. He is gonna be the Master. It's all gonna turn out in the end.
And so, all right. So, what I fear, and I will withhold judgment because I think this as a concept has the potential to just be brilliant. And I think, Dolly, we can speak to something in a little bit that you were telling me offline about the potential where this series can go with these guys. Because you know they'll be back. They have to come back. They have to come back. I cannot believe for one second that these crazy powerful beings were just introduced as a one-off. I can't. I refuse to believe it. In spite of all my disappointment with the Silence last year and the crazy weird Pandorica plot holes before that, I refuse to believe that this was a one-off. So that being said, I'm going to withhold judgment on these guys, and I will come back to this episode in the future if and when they explain more stuff. However, okay.
We're just going to sub on this episode. Sean get mad.
Sean rage.
So you have to do, though, I'm calm now because it just bothered me because it was such a great, great buildup of the first 30, 35 minutes. It was so great. And then even when they introduced the Shakri, it was so good. Mm-hmm. And then it just Like, it just fell off the cliff. It didn't even, like, trip. It flew off of the cliff.
Sean, you're calm, remember? Stay calm. Remember your blood pressure.
Sean, you know this episode? I think all those viewers got Packard this episode.
Oh,
because it was great
until
the very end.
Sports into this holy place, you piece of shit.
It should have been a touchdown. It should have been an interception, but it ended up being a bad call.
That's right. It was a close game back and forth. It was a little sloppily played.
God damn it. I will cut this corruption out of the heart of this beast immediately. Like,
they could have changed the play, the whole game with the Hail Mary pass at the end, and instead they botched it.
Yeah, they botched the shotgun.
Much to Steven's chagrin. But that being said, here's my point.
You guys are dead. Remember that? Remember that? You guys, check your mailboxes. Cubes. Cubes for all of you.
Okay. Well, moving on. Now that my crazy rant is out of the way, and I apologize in hindsight for that. The fact is you can look at this episode, like Steven said, as a character piece. Like all of this stuff that's got us really upset because we want to see the big picture in Doctor Who, and we want every episode to be perfect from beginning to end, it's window dressing. It's window dressing for the fact that we get an episode at the Pond's house in their life, which we really haven't seen ever before with pretty much any companions, not to this level. You know, we get an episode where it's basically a big farewell, right? I mean, this is all leading up to their final episode. And so we get these really intimate, really brilliantly acted character moments with the Doctor, with Amy, with the Doctor and Rory's dad, with Rory and Amy. Like, and it's just brilliant. And so if you choose, and not everybody will, but if you choose to see the episode as this penultimate scenario before they go and get whatever happens to them, and you choose to really appreciate these moments that have, you know, been built for the past 2.5 years, then it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Fantastic television. It's a fantastic time for people for fans who have watched this show all this time and who have really appreciated the bond that, you know, Amy and the Doctor have, and how she's gone from this kind of immature, you know, strip-a-gram, flirt with the Doctor on her wedding night girl, to somebody who has grown up, you know, finally appreciated him, appreciated Rory, then grew up even further, didn't have to be with him forever, even though they kind of can't stop. You know, and you see these arcs that are all paying off. They're paying off since the regeneration and since Matt Smith first said his, you know, Geronimo back whenever Tennant, you know, took his bow. So if you get rid of the chakra and you get rid of the window dressing and the cubes and whatever, and you appreciate the nod to Old Unit and Lethbridge Stewart and the Ponds and all of that, then it's a 5 out of 5 in my opinion. You know, and I think the way I'm going to ultimately rate this episode is a mix of the two, because it still is a Doctor Who episode from beginning to end, and it still is, I'm pretty sure, laying groundwork for a few parts of the series with these guys, and the ending is still just the churches. But at the same time, there's this perfect, perfect, perfect character buildup that is just beautiful to watch. And so I think you kind of average it out, and you just have to find somewhere in the middle, and it's still really enjoyable. You just – and I hate this phrase, but you kind of turn your brain off. And
that's the wrong phrase. You gotta, you see, because it's not, it's taking the, you gotta turn your brain off would be like if this entire episode was the exact opposite of what it is. You just, in this case, you need to turn your, you need to just refocus where you're putting your thoughts. You need to consider the more subtle moments and ignore the flashy, over-the-top sci-fi stuff.
Okay. Right, so turning it off is too strong of a phrase. You have to pick and choose your perception and how you want to appreciate the episode. You're right. Turning it off is too strong a phrase. And actually, I'm glad you countered that because I hate saying that. But
there you go.
Yes, so you have to kind of slice out what you want to like and what you don't. And as the Doctor Who story, it's, for the most part, it's got some really, really, really great stuff in there. Some really likable stuff. So... yeah, that took a little while, huh? Sorry about that.
That's all right. I think you. I think you nailed a lot of things with that. With your thoughts.
How many iPad cubes out of 5 or whatever were you?
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
Well, are we done? I mean, do we have anything else we need to discuss? I mean,
you know, I'm just gonna say again. That,
I still can't believe he left those humans on the ship.
Well, exactly.
Mind blowing to me. Like, were they dead?
Unless they were the only thing. Is if they were already dead. Like, all it would have taken was one line saying, "Like, shouldn't we help these people? Nah, they're already dead." Like, that's all he had to do.
I do have to say
the
that
little robot girl, I get that. Like, okay, fine, and the fact that all this weird stuff's happening and it makes no sense that they take people and the cube monster face guys, whatever. But the people left behind on an exploding Chakri spaceship in another dimension? That's kind of a big deal.
I mean, if you could have either had them already be dead, or you could have had Brian rolling them out while the doctor was distracting the Chakri AI or whatever, you know, it wouldn't have taken much to kind of fix that little nod there. Like it seems so strange, and especially since we had no idea why they were even there. In the first place, like, I mean, presumably to study them, but that was what the point of the cubes was. Like,
yeah, exactly. If you need to bring humans up to your spaceship, then why do you have to send a gajillion cubes to Earth?
Yeah, why bother playing Funky Chicken on your iPad cube when you've just got humans? Like, you can just use them or whatever, you know? I did like that
each cube kind of did its own thing, but I'm going to mention that I don't know if you guys, I mean, maybe I'm sure you guys have noticed this, but these last three episodes, the kind of main antagonist has been an elderly white male who has been, I don't want to say misjudged as an antagonist, but...
the war crimes guy an old dude?
He was older, yeah. I mean, he wasn't like 20s. He was probably in his like 50s, I'd say. 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
So,
no. Yeah. He had male pattern baldness, man. Yeah. He was wearing a monocle.
So it was all except for that first episode where we see the antagonist there, which will end up apparently becoming the doctor's new companion.
First companion.
Yeah. Later on.
Which,
so
it's gonna be strange.
So yeah, I found that interesting. This the white male antagonist, but.
Yeah, and we, like we were talking about last episode, Dali, another genocidal race.
Exactly.
You know, trying to wipe out an entire species. Yep.
Each of these episodes, again, they've all been very movie-like in that there's somebody out there who wants to, totally just kill everybody that's in existence. But my biggest complaint with all four of these episodes thus far is that. They have such strong antagonists that they're kind of left floating out in the wind, and I do want to see this either wrapped up somehow, each of these kind of plot lines, because they all seem like almost like the first half of a plot, right? So it's like,
well, that's another thing we were talking about last week was wouldn't it be cool if the doctor got the crazy Dalek and the tantrum bots and the cyborg all on the same team? Well, like, what could you imagine the exact opposite with all these villains pulled together in Legion of Doom style, ready to take down the doctor just in a smaller type of thing, which I guess we have seen before with the Pandorica opens and stuff like that. But I think they would. They're also, especially Sullivan is the one that really sticks out to me. I love Sullivan as a villain.
Yeah.
And the tantrum bots, but damn. But yeah,
they're
yeah.
such strong and such strong villains, strong antagonists. And I'd love to see these guys. You know, in previous seasons, you'll get like a one-off Dalek episode or a Cyberman two-parter or something. Each of these has introduced a completely new. Antagonist, or in the case of the first Dalek episode, the psycho Daleks, but a completely new type
of human Daleks,
Daleks,
exactly, infiltration Daleks or whatever.
But they're new races that we hadn't heard of yet, and I think it makes for a really interesting kind of take on that whole premise. So I'm really wondering now. I mean, we know next week we'll just kind of briefly mention next week the Angels Take Manhattan. Is the name of the episode. I'll try to post a link or the trailer in this post. But is the end of this first half of the season. I'm really interested now to know. I'm actually much more interested to see what the second half of this season turns out to be, because we supposedly get the Pond story finally wrapped up here next week. And so this whole second half of the season could be really out there and really new for Doctor Who fans. I mean, it's going to be something we haven't seen in 2.5, 3 years or so. How long have the Ponds been with the Doctor? How many seasons? So
three. This is the third season.
It's the third season.
Two and a half seasons.
So it's going to be kind of interesting. So let's get into unless there's anything else, let's get into the final scores.
Just to touch on that a little bit, we could see a situation where he built up this if you remember back in season 6, he kind of went and got his gang and those pirates from that episode nobody really cared about. Showed up for a brief minute and it's like, the ship is ours! Ha! This is a payoff! Ha ha! We could maybe see something like that with the gunslinger, I'm thinking.
Yeah, that we were talking. I mean, you listened to the last episode, but yeah, we talked about that exact same thing about like.
Right. I just.
Demon's Run would have been so much more effective if it had been established heroes or something like that. And maybe this is them kind of realizing that and saying, like, oh, hey, we've got these cool kind of heroes that we've been introducing. We could do something with these.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because. You know, certain rumors have it that certain Demon's Run characters may actually return, which is kind of interesting because it actually serves as Demon Run starting as a start off, like a launching point for recurring heroes that should have been recurring in Demon's Run. But that gets confusing neither here nor there. I do agree with Dolly that these really important, not important, but really, really good bad guys are so far underutilized and should absolutely, I hope, make future appearances. I mean, I have no doubt that the Shocker will be back. They have to be back. But, you know, the dinosaurs on a spaceship, I don't know. I would like to see that maybe future Doctor kind of realizes that it's kind of messed up to let somebody blow up on a ship. But I don't know, because depending on where this dark arc goes, maybe that all ties together and maybe there's a payoff and season 7-2 is a much darker Doctor that the new companion has to bring back to the light. I don't know.
There is a long history of the Doctor crossing over into moments that we've seen before and like changing things. We never do technically see Solomon's face as he dies or whatever. I could not, right. It would not be super surprising to me if in a Demon's Run style situation you saw the Doctor TARDIS back over to crossing his own timeline. After that Doctor leaves, the future Doctor drops back into Solomon's ship and plucks him out of the ship just in time to take him off somewhere else, you know, like, and that would be a pretty neat way to get the Tantrum bots back in, you know, get Solomon back into this, or maybe somebody else goes back and plucks him out of time, or you know what, maybe it's not the Doctor who pulls him out, maybe it's, you know, I don't know, the Master who does that, because yeah, you know who the Master could turn out to be, who would know where Solomon was at that time, Rory. You know, it's your fault, Ellie. You brought it up.
Just to add to the one last thing, I just found over on our good friends at Tumblr, somebody found another link to your theory, Sean, about the whole thing kind of going backwards. That point that you mentioned with the kind of the was it the pager or something, the beeper that.
Or
the charger. I'm sorry, the charger. Well, there's a point in that Dinosaurs on a Spaceship episode where Nefertiti? Nefertiti is walking, and they're kind of talking about, you know, introducing themselves. She's walking with Amy and the safari hunter.
Liddell.
Liddell. And Amy says, oh, of course I've heard about you. You're a queen. And Nefertiti turns around and says, and you, Amy, are you also a queen? And she says, Yes, I am. Totally tying back into that whole Henry VIII. This whole thing is going backwards. Really interesting.
Because technically, she did. She said yes to Henry VIII or whoever it was.
Yeah, she
married.
Accidentally. Uh-huh. Someone was talking, and I just said yes. And he says, to wedding vows. You just married Henry VIII on our anniversary.
Oh, yeah, that is another good one, Dally. Oh, Sean, man. Your theories sound more and more sound.
This is, you know, it's bonkers. It's bonkers.
One before we rate the episode, one final really kind of heartbreaking thing to leave off.
One final.
Rory's dad.
Oh yes.
I'm so bad with names. It's really embarrassing. But
Brian.
He's got the same name as my dad, so I
Brian.
Remember it.
Thor. Brian, yep. Thor.
Yeah, my dad is Odin. Odin Brian Strum.
Kind of heartbreaking to think about the fact that he probably has no idea he has a granddaughter.
Oh, yeah. That is kind of heartbreaking. I wonder if somehow they find that out this next episode.
They must have told him at some point during that year, the year with
the
doctor.
He had no idea the doctor existed. Well, how would they tell him? Hey, so that girl that we went to high school with, she regenerated into
During the timeline of this episode, they must have told him at some point. They couldn't have just forgotten to tell him that.
Really, though? Because then that kind of opens like a can of worms. Like, do they tell him about Demon's Run? Do they tell him that Amy can't get pregnant? Like, where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? I have to believe, and she hasn't been mentioned at all this season, by the way. At no point have they mentioned that they have a kid. They have not.
You know what? That is a great. Maybe that. Maybe it does get raised in the last episode here with Riversong coming back. Maybe Brian makes an appearance as well. We don't know, but yeah, that is crazy oversight if it wasn't done on purpose.
Yeah. So on that super happy note.
Yeah.
Rate the episode.
I'm gonna go first because I want to. I'm gonna rate this episode.
Oh shit! They're in the same clothes.
Yes.
Sorry.
Oh, now you see the. Now you see everything.
I always knew the charger was there. I didn't notice the clothes until right now. That's it. That's one final eureka moment on the reverse chronology.
Oh, he does say they were gone for 7 weeks. It all probably takes place in that 7 week period.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know this. I wonder if this episode is the bookend. If it's the first, you know, if it's the first and the last episode of these four episodes.
Yeah, it could be. That 7 weeks could be the first three.
Holy shit. Okay, stop it. There stop it. We need to write this thing.
Write this down, Stephen. I'm going to give it crap. See, that all this stuff kind of blew my mind out. And all of a sudden, I want to rewatch this episode for all the little nuances. That I was going to write this a 2. That little point probably moved it up to a 3 for me. Just because of all the Easter eggs in this episode.
So 3 out of 5 cubes for Dolly.
3 out of 5 cubes.
I'm going to give it a 5, actually. As much
Hold on.
As much as I did not enjoy, you know, the glaring plot omissions with the side stuff, I think what Sean said and what I was talking about earlier, you kind of have to pick and choose what you choose to take away from this episode, and what I chose to take away the character stuff, the quiet moments between Amy and Rory, the doctor talking to Brian about what happens to the companions. If you take the stuff with just the emotional moments of the relationships and everything like that, and you take all of that and put that together, I don't think that you put that with the plot stuff, I don't think you get a perfect episode. I don't think you get the best episode of Doctor Who ever, but I do think you get Doctor Who at its best. And I think that is worth a 5 out of 5, because this is by no means like me saying, like I said, this is not by no means, this is like a video game score. This is not meant to be that there is absolutely no problem, because there is not any single episode of Doctor Who that has no problem. But I think it is Doctor Who at its finest. So, and I think we're strapping in for an episode next week that'll make it even better in retrospect. So, 5 out of 5 cubes.
I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 with an asterisk. And I think I did this once last year too. I'm going to give it an asterisk, and I'm going to come back, and the rating is going to fluctuate depending on how they wrap up this.
Good point.
So as of right now, with all the crazy, terrible ending the last 10 to 15 minutes were, it probably would have brought it down to a 1 or a 2.
Yeah.
But all the character stuff would have given it a 4 or 5. So right now I'm going to land in the middle. I'm going to say 3 out of 5 for all the reasons I ranted about earlier. And I want to be able to come back either in the mid-season break or at the end of season 7 before the anniversary stuff starts and really see how much stuff was laid out here. And like Steven said, there's a good chance it might even be, after this coming episode where we get all the clarity and all the kind of stuff laid out that we've all been, semi-duped and everything's out of order or whatever. So, 3 out of 5 for me. And yeah.
So before we sign off, I think those are our scores. So we're – Sean and I, by the way, gave a 3 out of 5. Steven gave a 5 out of 5. It's going to be interesting. Next week, the Angels Take Manhattan is a huge episode. Thank you, Sean, for adding those in.
A bummer, though, that it's not a two-parter and it's running long? I'm pretty sure I read somewhere it's the average 40-minute episode. So they have
– I mean, I said that already. Yeah, it's super crazy to me.
They have a lot to do, in a very short amount of time.
And I think that was one of my major problems with the season finale of last year is they try, I've said before that sometimes Stephen Moffat tries to undertake too much in too little amount of time. And I think when he does a small episode in a 1 hour block like Blink, he can be absolutely brilliant. When he does a big episode in a 2 hour block, absolutely brilliant. The Time of Angels, absolutely gorgeous, episode. But when he tries to do a lot of stuff in 1 hour, he can kind of go off the rails, and I'm afraid of that's got me wary. But I don't think he could possibly, for a moment, believe that this isn't hugely important. And so I think we're gonna get Moffat at his absolute best.
Yep, I agree. And the Angels are my favorite antagonist out of all the kind of latest series of Doctor Who antagonists, especially the Matt Smith ones.
They're your favorite in general?
Out of the Matt Smith antagonists, they're my favorite ones for sure.
What are your favorite?
They're actually a Tenet antagonist.
They are. They started with the Tenet, but they've been really.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see them going back more towards the Tenet Angels. Don't Blink and all that, and less of like we can move, even though you're kind of staring at us because the lights are flickering.
That's actually something I don't think we've said before. I want to kind of get your guys' opinions. What are your favorite Doctor Who monsters?
Let's save that for a future episode.
What a rabbit hole, Jesus!
Yeah.
Oh, okay, we'll save that for we'll do like a monster special or something sometime. Yeah.
We've marked down a lot of special ideas.
it gives us something to do. During that mid-season break, or we're going to be having nothing to talk about.
It's about a 2 month break, I think. We will continue to record. Do not worry, faithful listeners. Before we sign off here,
and they never heard from us again.
You know, let's do a quick little sign off, and I'm going to leave you guys with one last little interesting tidbit, interesting factoid that's going to further blow your minds. But
I think it speaks well to this episode, and maybe helps my 5 out of 5 score make a little bit more sense. That how we feel about this episode, not one of us can fucking shut up about it.
Exactly. You can find us at Lonely TARDIS on Twitter. Again, our website will be up shortly. It's going to be lonelytardis.com. Be ready for it. Please keep checking. I will have it up as soon as time permits.
He's building it with Henry VIII style tools. A while.
And that's going to dive right into my little factoid in a second here.
Well, it's tough for Dally to do stuff like this because his computer was designed to be flown by 8 people. So when he's doing it all by himself, it doesn't work quite as well as it should.
Oh, Lord.
You come so close. Your jokes come so close.
But then
I want to give you the little nudge to make them like super funny.
I want to nudge him off. Him off the edge sometimes, off that cliff. You can find me at CoolRats, KEWLRATS on Twitter. You can find Sean Norton.
At Sean Norton, SHANNORTON. Well, he spelled his out, and he gave me the intro earlier. I didn't know if he was going to do it again. But yes, at Sean Norton on Twitter.
You can find Steven.
You can find Steven at Steven Strom on Twitter. That's STEVEN STROM. You can also find me on SideQuesting, writing articles, and I'm just generally being an ass.
Yeah, and you can please leave your comments in this post for each of these episodes. We do read them. We'll have, with the website launch, we will have the contact information so you can actually send us emails. But until then, please leave comments about our episode, about the Power of Three, anything Doctor Who related in this post.
Review us on iTunes too.
Yes. Oh, please review us on iTunes. Rate and review us. That's so helpful. So helpful. So I'm going to sign off right now with one last thing, gentlemen. Be ready. So if AB married King Henry VIII and the Doctor married Queen Elizabeth I, wouldn't that make Amy Queen Elizabeth's stepmother, which would mean that Amy Pond is a Doctor's mother-in-law twice? Thank everybody for listening to The Lonely TARDIS. Adios. Geronimo! BBC America.
Only on BBC America.